Let's begin tonight with a question. When you are driving in your vehicle, regardless of what speed you think you're going, what do you do when you see a police car? I'm going to take some guesses. I did hear some of those answers, but they didn't influence my guesses. I already had preconceived guesses. What's that? He speeds up in his Tesla. They probably are going to invent some kind of taser for a Tesla. I'm just letting you know. You cut the electricity to that thing, it's done. I'm going to guess you probably either just immediately out of instinct hit the brakes, or at least cover the brakes with your foot and then check what? Your speedometer. How did I know that? Because we all do it. Because I do it. Because people have told me they do that. No, it's because we all do it. It's a negative reaction that we have to the law via the lawman. The lawman there, the police officer, is a representative of the law. And we all have that immediate, without hesitation, negative flinch, negative reaction to the law. Because you're just sure that police officer is going to get you, even though 12 vehicles probably just passed you at about 85 mile an hour, maybe 95. And you're accidentally going over 4 miles an hour over the speed limit. You're going 74, accidentally, or at least that's your story that you give to your spouse. But you're 4 miles an hour over. You're just instantly, in that moment, sure that that police officer is going to ignore the other 12 and get you. And why is that? It's because you instantly have a guilty conscience. Instantly. Now, whether you have a habit of speeding or not, I think you still do this for this reason. You realize how easy it is to either accidentally or intentionally break the law, to go over the speed limit. So it's a very negative reaction, a reaction of fear. The law causes fear. Now, the law was not intended to be that way, at least most of the laws in our country. Let's just stick with the speed laws for now. We won't talk about some of the other ones. But those speed laws were not created to be negative laws. They were created to be very positive laws. They were created to protect you and your family in your car on the road and get you safely to your destination. That's the purpose of the law. So the law is positive. The law is good. And yet you have that negative reaction. And so it is with the Ten Commandments. These commandments were not designed by God to be negative commandments at all or in any way. They are designed by God to be very positive. Just as the speed limits, they are designed to help us positively, successfully navigate life and get to our destination, heaven, safely. And yet the reaction of the most of us is a very negative reaction to the law. And again, for the same reason, immediate guilty conscience, because you know how easy it is, intentionally or unintentionally, to break God's laws. Now, if that's your tendency, the worst thing that you can do is say, I don't want to hear the Ten Commandments. I don't want to read them. I don't want to know them. I don't want them in my memory banks because they are too convicting. They are too condemning. I'd rather just not read them, do the best I can, and then find out what the afterlife is all about when I get there. But that is the worst thing that you can do. The best thing that you can do, if that is your tendency to have a negative, visceral response to the law, the best thing that you can do is read them. Study them, learn them, memorize them, and bring them before your mind constantly in life. Think about them all the time, in every situation. What is this emotion I'm experiencing? What do the Ten Commandments say about that emotion? Is it a sin? Is it an okay emotion? That's the best thing that you can do, is to begin to train yourself to think of the laws of God, the commandments of God, as positive laws that reveal dirt in your life so that you can acknowledge them, embrace them, and work to clean those things up. Life is really like, you're like a glass of water. You can take a glass of water that's dirty, that's just filled with sediment, and if you set it on the table long enough and just leave it, all the sediment settles to the bottom. And you can look at the glass, and whether or not it's half empty or half full, that depends on your personality trait, optimist or pessimist. But you can look at that glass that's been sitting, and it can look clean. It can look okay. It can look drinkable and safe. But when you take the spoon and you start to stir up the bottom, then you get to see the truth of what's in that glass. You get to see how dirty the glass is. That's what the law is like for us. Now, in that little analogy, if you didn't catch on to it, you're the cup, your body is the cup, your heart, your life, your essence, your being, your soul, your spirit, that's the water. And the law of God, the Ten Commandments, is the spoon that stirs everything up and shows you what's in there. And that may sting when you see how dirty things get, but it's a positive thing because it gives us the chance to recognize sin in our own lives and deal it a death blow every chance we get. The Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 7, verse 7, I would not have known sin unless it was for the law. That's how I found out what sin was. I learned it from God's commandments. Now, Paul will also tell us in Galatians that we can't be justified by the deeds of the law. No flesh can. We are only justified by faith in Christ and not by the law. So understand this. As you follow the Ten Commandments, as a New Testament believer, following those Ten Commandments stirs up the water. And I want you to know this. You're never going to see clean water. You're just not going to. If you examine the Ten Commandments, if you study them and turn them internal and apply them to yourself, and you look at yourself as a clean person, you look at yourself as having arrived and having succeeded and having kept the law, listen, I assure you, your understanding of God's holiness just isn't quite there yet. And what you're doing, I'll tell you what you're doing. I know for a fact, If you examine your life against the Ten Commandments and see yourself as clean and justified by the Ten Commandments, here's what you did. You looked at the surface of the Ten Commandments. You looked at them as external laws, and you didn't look at them as internal governing, because the law of God was intended not just to govern our actions, we know that, but it was intended to govern our thoughts, our motivations. There's a thing known as the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. So if you read the Ten Commandments and you say, I got it. I didn't murder anyone today. And I've been cutting back, you know, overall. Did real good this week. I didn't steal my neighbor's stack of lumber. It was tempting, but I didn't do it. The law has justified me. What you did was you went by the letter of the law, but you didn't go by the spirit of the law. Jesus taught us about the spirit of the law in the New Testament. The spirit of the law is this. You may not have stole that lumber, but when you saw your neighbor's lumber stack sitting in his yard for 1 day and 2 days and 3 days and 2 weeks, you started to look up prices of lumber and you got tempted and you thought about it. Well, would he even really know if I snuck out a few two befores or sheet of OSB? So it's that thing that the law governs. And it's not like one exterior rule that we read and say, okay, got it. No. As you're going to see through these studies in the Ten Commandments, you can't really ever plumb the depths of the commandments. You can continue to examine them and explore them, and you'll find more and more that the law applies to in your own life. So, here's what the law should do. It should keep you humble. Because when you take the spoon of the law and you stir up the cup, you know, if you're only stirring the surface, yeah, it's not going to look that dirty to you, but if you get down there like the law wants to and stir up the sediment on the bottom, if you really take it to the heart and to the soul, you're going to see how dirty you are. That's going to humble you, and that is going to keep you dependent on Christ for your justification and your salvation. That's right where you need to be. That's right where you need to be. So even though the law stings when we read it, even though it points out our flaws and our weak spots, it's good for us. It is natural and normal for us, and it's a great thing because it pushes us toward Christ. It keeps us in that dependency so that our salvation doesn't become about anything else except for that free gift that he gave us. Now, with that in tow, we are only going to cover the third commandment tonight, but as we cover the third commandment and the remainder of these commandments, let's allow the law of God to stir us up. Let's allow the Lord to stir these cups and really show us what's in there. Would you make a commitment with me throughout this remainder of our study of the Ten Commandments to not ignore your faults or explain them away? The legalist does that. The person that claims to be justified by works, that's what they do. They justify themselves with excuses. Well, yeah, I had that thought, but that was his fault. He never should have said that to me. And yeah, I did that other thing, but that would have never happened if that person wouldn't have got involved the way they did. So they make excuses for their behavior and the attitudes of the heart that don't match up to God's law. They excuse themselves away. Let's commit to not do that. Let's let the law just show us as for who we are when we study through this. Are you in it with me? All right? I'm not going to be laying guilt trips on you as we do this. I'm going to be sharing with you my views on the Ten Commandments. And I want you to take those home with you, pray about the things that I've shared, and ask the Lord if he wants you to apply these commandments in the same way. So Exodus chapter 20, let's take a look at the third commandment, verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. I'd like to define two words there for you, the word take and the word vain. Now, if you like to take notes, you'll want to eventually get this down. This is a very important part to understanding verse 7 and the third commandment. Let's start by defining the easier word. It's the word vain. It's the word shav in Hebrew, and it simply means to empty something of its content or meaning. It means to render something useless. So at face value, the Lord says, don't take my name and render it useless. All right, and now I want to define for you the word take. It is the Hebrew word nasa, and it means a lot of different things. It's got a lot of different definitions. If you look this up, this word can mean many things, all depending on the context that it's used. But I found two words that I think can summarize all of those other definitions, two English words: accept and advance. So take can mean to accept, or it can mean to advance. Now, which one does it mean in the context of verse 7, the third commandment? What does take mean? Does it mean to advance or to accept? Well, to be safe, I'm going to just let you know where I stand. I firmly believe that you can't split it up. It's a Hebrew word that has a full meaning, and we have to pick an English word. We can't really put two words in there. So our translations pick the word take, which would be the same as accept or receive. Do not receive, do not accept the name of the Lord in a useless way. But I'm going to suggest to you that God fully intends for both meanings to be present here. So this means, and if you're a note taker, make sure you get this down. We're going to be looking at this commandment in two different lights. Number one, it means not to accept his name in a way that empties it of meaning. And number two, it means not to advance his name in a way that renders it useless or empties it of its power, that degrades God in any way. All right, If you have that statement written down or a little summary of what I just shared with you, given a little bit of time and a whole lot of meditation, I think, I'm firmly convinced, you will arrive at all the same conclusions that I'm about to share with you. But I'm going to save you some of the meditation work, and I'm going to help you a little bit, and I'm going to speak about this. First of all, I want to start by sharing with you what it means to advance his name in a way that empties it of meaning. To advance is to put something out there. God is saying, don't put my name out there in a vain way. Don't put my name out before others in a way that degrades me in any way or uses my name in a way that is absolutely empty of meaning. So I would just put it like this. Simply put, do not use God's name in vain. Do not use God's name in vain. I'm starting with that one because that seems to be the most common interpretation of this third commandment. And I don't really understand that. I'm surprised by that. We Christians, we just almost immediately understand, and rightfully so, that that's what the commandment is telling us. Do not use God's name in vain. But that's not what our English text tells us. Our English text tells us not to take the name of the Lord in vain. Now, it's accurate, but I'm pointing out it's the tougher conclusion, definition, and interpretation to assent to agree to come to, and yet we do naturally. All right? And that's right. Don't use God's name in vain. Don't use his name in a manner that empties it of meaning. The reason why God forbids this should be very obvious. God wants his name to be hallowed and honored in all the earth. When believers and unbelievers hear his name, it should stop us in our tracks. It should cause our hearts to stand at full attention. It should bring over us that sense of awe and wonder and reverence. But the problem is that when a society is guilty of repetitively and habitually using God's name in a useless manner, what happens is we become conditioned to that and we become desensitized to the holiness of God's name. Hollywood has done a good job of making that happen in our society. The music industry has done a good job of making that happen in our society. They throw God's name around worthlessly. They attribute God's name and attach it to things that are filthy, degrading the name of God, devaluing the name of God, desensitizing us to the name of God, so that by the time we hear the name of God, if we weren't raised in a church, we think it's nothing more than a curse word. You almost get to the point where when you go up to someone, and I don't know if you would do this, but if you would go up to someone and say, hey, do you know Jesus Christ? You're almost half expecting them to say, oh yeah, I know that curse word. I use that one. The name of God has lost all meaning in our society. That's the kind of thing that the Lord is trying to avoid. And I say he has every right to do so. There's certain things I don't want my name attached to. If you're selling a product I don't back, I don't want it to say Pastor Arlen approved in your ad on social media. I don't want there to be a private meth lab down there, Pastor Arlen's meth lab. I'm going to get my name off of that. I don't want my name attached to filthy things. God, all the more so because my name is not holy. I like it. It's a good name. It means a good thing. Got good meaning behind it, but my name is not holy. All the more so. God's name is holy. And we should not attach that name to something that's filthy or use that name in a way that empties it of its meaning. So that's why God forbids it. But I don't want to assume that you know what this looks like in real life. So here's what I'm going to do. Humor me for a little bit. Because if I'm honest, and you're probably saying, I sure hope you are, because you're up there preaching, teaching. If I'm honest, I've heard Christians I'm not going to say whether it's from this church or not. I've heard Christians use God's name in vain and think nothing of it. Now, I know the people, so I know their hearts. They don't realize they're doing it. They do it out of ignorance, but they're taking God's name in vain and they think nothing of it. I just want to remind you that ignorance of God's law is not a good reason to break his law. If that's the best you got when you stand before God in judgment, oh, well, I didn't know, so, well, let me in. If that's the best you got, I think you got a weak case, because the Lord would say, well, you may not know that. You may not realize that you were using my name in a degrading way all throughout your life. But that book of mine, the Bible, 66-volume book in one, that sat on your shelf for 30 years, it was in there. And if you'd have looked over that passage just a few times, one of the basics, the 10 commandments of life, it might have stopped you from dishonoring me by degrading my name, by dragging my name through the mud. So ignorance is not a good excuse. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk through this in a very elementary way. I'm going to give you some very basic examples, and I'm going to say some of the words. I don't want you to be offended tonight. I'm going to say some of the words you'd never hear me say outside of this setting. So when I throw these words around tonight, when I say these phrases or expressions, I want you to understand I'm not using them in a vain way, and I'm not using God's name in a vain way. I'm doing this for the purpose of teaching you. And in the purpose of teaching you, what I'm hoping to do is elevate his name again. I'm hoping that through this teaching, through me using expressions and giving you examples and saying things I wouldn't say in life, I hope that what I'm going to do here is cause all of us as a church and those listening out there on Facebook Live to honor God's name even more so. So bear with me as we take a look at this in a very elementary kind of way, as we go through some very basic examples of what this looks like. Let me start with this. First of all, do not use God's name or any variant of God's name or title or descriptive name. Don't use God's name in any way as a curse word. Let me tell you the most commonly used curse word that involves the name of God, and it is this: God damn it. Now just let's use our Christian hearts and our godly brains for a minute to think about the stupidity of those kind of statements, God damn this and God damn that. Think about the stupidity and the inappropriateness for a believer to use that kind of language. Let's look at an example. I'm gonna aim this toward the guys. There may be some ladies that like to do this sort of thing too, but I think this is mostly applicable to the guys. Let's say that you are changing the brakes on your vehicle, either because you're a good mechanic or you're too cheap to spring for a good mechanic, maybe a little bit of both. So you go to change the brakes on your vehicle, and you're trying to get the caliper free from the bracket, and you got those two big bolts, and they just won't let loose. I use this as an example because this is life experience. This is typical, getting those two gigantic bolts free. So you get the standard ratchet out, and you give it a shot. That don't work. You bring out the impact set, and that doesn't work. You squirt it down with WD-40. You get the blowtorch out, and you're thinking about it. I might just take the blowtorch to this thing. Nothing that you do frees those bolts from that bracket, so you say in anger, God damn it. Think about what you just said. What did you damn? What did you say? Here's what you just said by saying God damn it in that situation. You have prayed a curse over your brakes. Do you think that's really a wise thing? That's what you did when you're working on your brakes and you said, God damn it. What you were saying is, God, curse these brakes to hell. And you better hope God don't take you up on that and answer that prayer. Because when you're driving down the road at 74 miles an hour, because you don't see any cops, you would be going 70 if you saw cops, but You're going 74 miles an hour down the road. The last thing that you want to have happen is those cursed brakes give out on you. Or how about this? You're working on something, men. And we all do it, unless you have an air nailer. You strike the thumb with the hammer. And what do you say? Well, hopefully no one in here. What does the world say? God damn it. Well, let me ask you, what are you damning in that situation? Are you damning the hammer? Because if you're praying damnation over the hammer, that probably means the hammer's going to get your thumb again. Are you damning your thumb? That's your thumb. If you damn your thumb, you're not going to be able to hitch a ride. You're not going to be able to thumb for a ride when your cursed brakes give out. So what are we doing? Do we understand the seriousness of what we're saying? If God would just really answer those prayers instantly, you know how screwed up your life would be? You know how messed up things would be in life? The door was sticking. You God damned it. So it fell off. Your brakes were sticking. You God damned it. So they gave out on you coming down the summit. Life would be a mess. Hey, it gets even worse when we start God damning people. In moments of temporary anger, we're literally, whether we realize it or not, whether there's meaning behind it or not, we are literally praying for God to curse people to hell. Sometimes our spouses, our children, our family members, our close friends, because of anger. I personally knew of a young lady that was having marital problems, marital disputes in her home. Things got really bad. And one morning before his shift, they really got into it. And she really let loose on him. And she used some colorful language, some very foul language. And she said things like this. She told me her story. She said things like this: God damn you. Now here's the sad part. That man, her husband, he went off to work to do his shift. He went straight into work, straight to his desk. He sat down at his desk, exhausted, emotionally spent, and hurting. He folded his hands and put his head down, and he died there on the spot of a heart attack. Now, how do you think that worked out for the young lady that had just goddamned him and cursed him up and down? Not well. And she was a mess, a disaster, a wreck for a very, very long time. To be honest, I don't know if she's well today. I don't know how she's doing today, because she blames herself. She blames herself. She hurts over the way that things ended there in that situation with her husband, because deep down, under the temporary anger and the careless usage of words and the attachment of God's name to curses on her husband, the fact was she really loved him. Now, am I suggesting that God took her up on that and answered her prayer and damned her husband and killed him on the spot? Of course not. All I'm suggesting is that we don't understand the weight of what we're saying when we use God's name as a curse word. I hope it's not a problem for anyone in here. If it is, I think it's time to really start working on that problem. May those type of words, those reckless and blasphemous words with God's name attached, never come out of your mouth. Now, let me show you what it sounds like when you use God's name as an expletive. What is an expletive? It's a foul word. It's a, we would say, a four-letter word. Here's what it sounds like when you use God's name or some form of it as an expletive. It is as subtle and as simple as this: oh my God. Or OMG on your social media posts and emails and texts. OMG. Let me give you an example. This is for the ladies. We picked on the men. This is for the ladies, the sisters. Hypothetical example. let's say a friend of yours, a girlfriend of yours, ladies, she's celebrating a special anniversary with her husband. So excitedly, she gets all decked out. She gets her makeup on and a fancy evening gown. She gets her hair did. And she's excited to show you how wonderful she looks. So she comes over to your house. You're her best friend. And she wants you to see her. And you see her and you say this: "Oh my God, you look amazing." Now, is that fine? Is that harmless? Is that okay to say? Or is that using God's name in vain? Well, let's ask a few questions, shall we? Let's examine this, shall we? You said, "Oh my God, you look amazing." Why did you say that? Why did you attach God to that statement? "Oh my God, you look amazing." Why did you say that? Was it a prayer? I don't think so, unless you were interrupted, like you were praying, "Oh my God, I come to you in Jesus." "Oh, you look amazing." No, get real. You weren't praying. That wasn't a prayer. Strike one. Was it a praise? I doubt it. "Oh my God, praise your name for how amazing she looks. You're so wonderful, Lord, the things you've made." I don't think that's it. So it's not a prayer. It's not a praise. It's not spiritual in any way. You're not using God's name to teach. You're not quoting a scripture. There's no spiritual use for you to put God's name into that. So what you're doing is you're using it as an expletive. You're using it as a filler word. You're throwing God's name around carelessly and recklessly, as if his name isn't higher than every other name and honorable, the only name under heaven given whereby mankind must be saved. You are, in doing so, using his name in vain. You're attaching God's name to useless stuff. Now, anytime you do that, there's a simple test that'll tell you if you're using God's name as an expletive, as a four-letter word. Here's the test. Take out God's name in the sentence you just gave. Insert an expletive. I'm not going to list them out for you, and I'm not passing out paperwork. If you don't know them, I don't want you to know them. Insert an expletive in there. Insert a cuss word, some foul language in there, and if it doesn't change your intended meaning whatsoever, then you've used God's name as an expletive. Here's another example. It's as simple as saying, "Oh, Lord," or "Jesus Christ." Let me give you an example of this. Let's just say hypothetically that me and Maggie went to a pirate game last night, which we actually did. And you're a big Bucko fan, so when we saw you in church tonight, we immediately rushed up to you and we said, "Did you see what happened? The Pirates were winning the most of the game. They were winning, but oh, they blew it again. And at the last minute, they let the game slip away and they lost 4-3 to the stupid Cubs, Chicago Cubs." Ah. And you say, "Oh, Lord, of course." Or you say, "Jesus Christ, not again." Now let me ask you, same test. Did you use it in a spiritual way? "Lord, Jesus Christ," did you use it in a spiritual way? Was it prayer? Hey, the Pirates need prayer, but it wasn't a prayer. Was it a praise? Nothing praiseworthy right now in that organization. They need players, bad, good players. Wasn't a prayer, it wasn't a praise. Was it spiritual at all? Did it have a spiritual overtone? Was there a use of it for the purpose of glorifying God? Your answer is going to be no. You've used the Lord's name in vain. Anchored? Not up here to put a guilt trip on you. I'm not up here to try to tell you what to say and what not to say, because that's always the question. Well, then what do I say when I smack my hammer with the thumb? Or my thumb with the hammer? I did that on purpose to see if you guys were paying attention. What do I say, Arlen, when I smack my thumb with the hammer? Yeah, how about ouch? Just a thought. Just a suggestion. How about ouch? What do you say when you hear that the Pirates lose again? How about this? That's plenty. All you need. I'm not up here to tell you what to say and what not to say. I'm up here to get you to think about what the commandment really means and what it's really saying. Pray about this. Ask the Lord to help you so that every time you use God's name in any form, anytime His name or any variant of His name comes from your lips, that you have a spiritual and honorable reason to speak it. No expletives. God's name is not an expletive. No curse words with His name in it. God's name is not a curse word. And may I be so bold as to suggest, don't even use His name as a filler. Sometimes we do that when we're praying. And I'm talking to all of us. We use the word Lord or God as if it's our period for the end of every sentence. I do think we use it recklessly and carelessly. It's not a filler word. It's not a curse word. It's not an expletive. His name is holy. So if it's going to come off your lips, make sure it is intentional and for the purposes of honoring Him or communicating Him in some way. Do you know that the Jews, as far back as I can study, so revered the holy name of God that they wouldn't even say the name Yahweh in full? Did you know that? They wouldn't say Yahweh. They were in such reverence of the name of God and so concerned that they might violate the third commandment that they shortened the name of Yahweh to what? Yah. Y-A-H. And I'm talking, folks, they just wouldn't use it. Even when they read it. And when they read it in the Old Testament scriptures, when they read the name Yahweh, they won't say Yahweh. They say Yah. When the scribes copied the Old Testament scriptures, when they got to the name Yahweh, they would write Yah. Now, maybe that's an overabundance of caution. But I think we can learn from the heart behind that. I think that's very honorable. Lord, I don't even want to get close to using your name carelessly, haphazardly. I don't want to just be throwing your name around. I don't want to get so used to saying your name or your titles that it just becomes filler words or flowing words or expletives. I don't want it to be exclamations on my sentences. When your name comes off of my mouth, I want to make sure I mean it and I'm honoring it. So, that is all under the umbrella of God's name being advanced, being used in vain. There's a whole nother umbrella here. But don't worry, it's not going to take me long. I want to share this with you and then we'll close. There's a second umbrella here. Here's what most people miss when it comes to the third commandment. True, God's name is not to be a curse word or an expletive or a filler word. We are not to advance or put God's name out there in an empty and meaningless way, but neither are we to take, to accept, to wear His name in a worthless or useless or vain manner. It's arguably the greatest blasphemy here in the whole teaching. It's obviously arguably the greatest blasphemy to claim the name of the Lord, to call Him Lord, to claim the title Christian, to claim to be believer and follower, and yet in your actual true life, you are neither a believer or a follower. Here's what that may look like. That may look like coming to church on Sunday and praising the name and calling on the name and then completely ignoring him Monday through Saturday. It may look like that. It may look like this. I know you're familiar with these people. Well, I'm a Christian, but I don't go to church. There's people there. I don't like people. And people don't like me because I don't like people. I don't go to church. I don't crack the book. I don't pray, but I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. That's my title. I put that on my social media profile. Religion. Christian. That is taking, bearing, accepting God's name in vain. It can look many different ways, but what it is, in summary, is it's that worthless, useless, vain kind of association that a person has with the Lord. Do you remember from our Luke studies? This kind of person is a chino. You remember that? It's something I made up, but I guess I liked it because here I am using it again. It's like a rhino. Do you remember what a rhino is? A Republican in name only. What does that mean? They're really a Democrat. They're posing as a Republican, trying to steal Republican votes. Whatever their reason, they're not really a Republican. They are a rhino, R-I-N-O, a Republican in name only. So what's a chino? It's a Christian in name only. You've taken the name. You bear the name. You consider yourself a Christian, but he's not your Lord. You don't really believe, and you certainly don't follow. I think, without a doubt, not a shred of doubt in my heart. That looked like something Donald Trump would do. Not a shred in my heart of doubt that when the Lord gives us this third commandment, he means all of that, every single bit of that. So whether you are advancing God's name in vain or accepting God's name in vain, I believe that both are prohibited here in the third commandment. To be sure, they are prohibited in the 66-volume book that he gave us. So tonight, would you stand with me? We're going to close out in a song and a prayer. Yes, believe it or not, we actually got to the song tonight. I don't know if you know this, but every Wednesday night we have a song prepared to do at the end of the service. We just, for some reason, never get to it. But we're going to close out in a quick prayer here and a song. Now, it is my current plan. Worship team, you can come on up. My current plan to take the next four commandments next week. That's my current plan. But my plan tonight was to go through all of the rest of the commandments. So what I'm telling you is that is my current plan, the next four commandments next week, and then finish it up the week after. But I'm going to make this commitment. I'm going to stay open to how the Lord might influence my study. And if he takes us on another long adventure, another hard look at any or all of the commandments, I'm in. Are you in? If it's a 10-week study, I'm still in. I hope you are. But that's the plan. Two more weeks, and then we'll be done with the Ten Commandments. All right, let's pray.